Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Real As Yates podcast. We are your hosts, Taylor Yates
and Paige Yates.
In this podcast, we share with you everything we know about real estate, Greater Boston, and life. And in case you're wondering, yes, we are in fact related. We are a top producing mother-son real estate agent team where we lead, surprise, the Yates team. So, Mom, how you doing?
Good. I've got some very important news.
Hit me.
So, as you know, I'm on a bowling team, which for those of you that bowl with candle pins, I don't know that I would consider it an athletic event. However, I was very proud of myself because I don't have a very good average. It's only 65.
Okay.
But last week, somehow I was on fire and I got an 83. Which is awesome for me. So I was very proud of myself and I was able to help my team, which is good.
And awesome. Congratulations.
It's such fun because it's so multi-generational and being on a team is great. So I was very, very excited to do a good job getting an 83 as well as helping my team.
Good job. Who was on your team? Like, how many people are they? So are they like a bunch of ladies like you or?
No, it's co-ed.
Okay.
And we kind of range in age from mid 80s all the way down to 40s. Mm-hmm. So we have a combination and I'm so impressed. I mean, yeah. Some of the people are just really good. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about this bowling league is I only have to bowl my average. So we can have someone on our team that's not. That might have a 30 average. Mm-hmm. And if they get a 30 average, 31 every time, they make a point for our team.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So it's great. So in my particular case, when I went over so much, my team got all those points, which was very exciting because we happened to need it at the time.
Yeah.
Because we had a few people that were like really bad.
Yeah.
That's what happens. The next time I rolled, I was terrible. So, you know, it's kind of up and down, but it's really fun.
That's awesome. You live in a very nice town. And I kind of have this picture in my mind of you at your candlepin bowling and on your team having at least one celebrity, one pro athlete, and one Fortune 500 CEO.
Actually, that's not true at all. We don't have any of those.
Yeah.
In fact, we have someone that's working at Macy's now and he's in his 80s. So, you know, you have all kinds. So it's really fun and it's all different age groups. And I really appreciate and respect the people that are 85 years old, getting up, rolling down, working hard to contribute to the team and still being active. And it's nice to see that.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Okay. So this month we are talking about getting started on your home search because it is spring market. And this week we're going to talk about making a competitive offer in a seller's market, which is basically every year in the Boston area. We have a big housing shortage, which means that when you make an offer on a house, you are often competing. Not always, but often. So in a market where sellers have the upper hand, how important is the initial offer?
So I believe that in the initial offer, you've got to be strong enough to get the sellers to engage with you.
Agreed.
And notice you. So if someone says to me that they want to put in an asking offer with a mortgage contingency and an inspection, I say to them, you just need to understand from the seller's point of view, nothing about that offer excites them in this very low inventory competitive market. Even though what they're offering is good, and fair, it's not going to work in this market.
Right. And yes, I 100% agree. And there are some things where, you know, the challenge that every buyer has, not just first-time buyers or 10th-time buyers, is you might make, in your home search, you might make 1 to 5 offers as the buyer. But we, as real estate agents, make like 2 to 5 a week. So we have a really good sense of where the market is because we have so much more data at our disposal and we're able to say things like at this price point, in this location, for this type of house, here are the things that are going to work in your offer and here are the things that are going to be hard to get through. Now, the question I often get from people is, how do best and final rounds work, right? So often you make your first offer, and when there's multiple offers, the seller does a best and final round. Now, the unfortunate news I have to tell people is that there is no rule book for how best and final rounds work. It works however the seller wants to do them. They could happen not at all. They could happen for like the top three offers. They could happen for everybody. Like they're just, you can't, there's no
precedent.
Yeah, there's no way that you can kind of engineer your way into the best and final round. So it gets back to what you were saying is you have to start at least with something compelling. Otherwise, they're going to move on to somebody else.
And sellers have to take into consideration as they're looking at multiple offers, what makes sense to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's any kind of part of your offer that puts them at risk in a week or 2 weeks or with a mortgage contingency in 30 or 60 days, that deters them from picking you.
Right. At the end of the day, what sellers want is money and certainty.
Correct.
Right. They want the biggest check possible, but they want to make sure that you're actually going to close.
Correct.
So when you put in an inspection contingency and a mortgage contingency, those may be totally reasonable things for a person to ask for, but you have to know you have reduced the certainty that to the seller that you are going to close. So there are a couple of ways that I tackle that. One is shorten the distance from offer getting accepted to purchase and sale. Most sellers feel that once they get to purchase and sale, they're in the clear. So if you can say to people, hey, I'll do that in like 5 days or 7 days, then they relax a little bit because they're like, well, if the deal's going to fall apart, it's going to fall apart quickly. Then I just go, you know.
I'll be on the market by next weekend.
Exactly. The second thing is earnest money checks. So just contract law, you have to pay some earnest money when your offer gets accepted in Massachusetts. It's traditionally $1,000. It doesn't have to be, though. It could be whatever number you want. And so a lot of how these deals work is when an offer gets cold feet or something, they lose their earnest money deposit. They sort of, it's almost like a bribe to like not get sued to close. And so a lot of people will walk away from $1,000. Not a lot of people will walk away from $10,000. So it's another way of saying to the seller, like, hey, if you accept me, I'm in. I'm already in for five digits here. So take me seriously.
With the certainty thing.
Exactly.
That you're going back to is they want certainty.
Exactly.
That's just another way of showing them.
Correct.
That you're a serious buyer.
Correct.
And not looking to get out of a deal.
Yes, exactly.
You know, like, because we're finding where you have multiple offers on these homes and someone might get 5 or 10 offers, someone throws their hat in and does not give the certainty to the sellers, they're like, I don't know, because buyers are so anxious to get houses, they're putting in offers everywhere.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I've been in situations where in a weekend, I know that a buyer has put an offer in 3 different houses because they need a house and they don't know.
So stressful.
Yeah, it's hard.
Because just so you know, if your offer gets accepted by law, they can force you to close. Again, most people don't do that. Most sellers just take your earnest money deposit as like a bribe to not sue you. But, you know, you could, and then you could be on the hook for buying 3 houses. Let's talk about mortgage pre-approvals. How important is that?
Well, I don't really go out with people until I've had them speak to a mortgage person and get a letter together.
Which is a long way of saying essential.
Correct.
Right? If you don't have a mortgage pre-approval, it's almost not even worth making an offer.
If there are some cases where people have sold a house and they're paying cash for something, then I ask them for a financial institution to write them a letter. So some sort of confidence that financially you're capable of purchasing the home is what I'm looking for. And I will not present an offer without that.
Correct. And, you know, this is where a real estate agent really shows their chops, right? Is like, what are the different ways to achieve what we're trying to achieve that may not be the kind of thing that you read in a real estate blog or see in a textbook, but get you there. But I will say most people are getting a mortgage. And so there's a couple of things that I think are really important in mortgage pre-approvals. Number one is a reputable mortgage broker from a reputable mortgage brokerage company. There are just some fair or unfair, that scare off sellers. If you show up with something from that bank or that person, they're going to be like, oh my God, no
Some
way.
Some banks scare me off.
Yeah.
So I tell them,
get like, it from somebody else.
You've got to go to somebody else because I know that that bank will not be able to close in 30 days.
Correct.
And that's what the sellers want. So
correct.
It's some of it is your real estate agent has a big factor mm-hmm. in knowing the resources that you're tapped into and being able to present them to the selling agent, listing agent, and convince them that you're well qualified.
Correct. And so the other factor that's really important is there's actually a range of pre-approval letter quality, and it boils down to how much documentation you've given your mortgage broker. So a good listing agent is, if they're about to accept your offer, before they do that, they're going to call your mortgage broker and they're going to say, what'd you base this letter off of? Is it just self-reported income? Because if so, then we have a problem. I try to prepare my clients by saying, here's the checklist of five documents that I have asked mortgage brokers
that they need.
That they need, right? So if you send these five to them, then I can turn around and say to that listing agent, this is not a baloney pre-approval letter. Here's the documents that we've sent. And if you doubt me, you can, you know, the mortgage broker's name and number are right there on the pre-approval. You can call him or her to confirm. Yeah. So absolutely, absolutely essential to have a pre-approval and a good one. We're going to take a quick break, and then we've got a couple of more questions.
Did you know that Taylor and I aren't just your favorite real estate podcast hosts? We're also pretty darn good at our day jobs. With over 30 years experience and $1 billion sold in Greater Boston, we're real estate agents you can trust. If you're buying or selling a home, reach out to us at contact@yatesboston.com today.
All right, Mom, what kind of houses do martial artists like?
Action ones?
Good guess.
let me see.
Roundhouses.
Roundhouses. That's good.
Okay. So we're going to get a question from the audience here. Does the size of the down payment matter to the seller? I'm going to say yes, it is not. It matters. It's not a deal breaker for a lot of people. If the terms of the rest of your offer are good and you did what we talked about before the break, of actually getting a real vetted pre-approval letter, you can kind of squeak by with a lower than 20% down payment. You know, it also helps if you have a story of like, hey, it's lower because I'm getting a doctor's loan, or, you know, I'm participating in some sort of special program with my bank, et
like
cetera.
VA.
Or the VA. Yep. That helps too.
But I will say that in this current market where we've seen, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, homes that have gone over $200,000 over asking, which happened also in the early 2000s, that one fear sellers think about and have to take into consideration is if your down payment is smaller or lower than they're comfortable with, it may be a result of the fact that they're worried about the appraisal of the mm-hmm. home doesn't come into current market conditions.
Right.
And you, because of the blind appraisal system, you don't know everybody that's coming to the houses and don't know if they understand the market that you're selling in.
Right. And so what you're getting at, though, is if the bank appraises your house for less than what you paid for, then you've got to stump up some extra down payment. So if you start by saying to the seller, I'm going to do like a 40% down payment, they know that you've got the cash to then dial it back to just a standard mortgage that
correct.
Anybody can get. Whereas if you are like saying, hey, I'm a 5% down loan, then that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, it comes back to the original part, which was what their confidence of knowing that you can actually complete
close.
The sale.
Yeah. Thanks for the great question. If you're a curious cat and you would like your question to be considered, you can just send us an email at contact@yatesboston.com or slide into our DMs at Yates Team Boston. That's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week wherever you find your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, be sure to like, subscribe, and give us that 5-star review. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Yates Team Boston or on the web at yatesboston.com.